This is Chick Flick Fix. I'm Julia Scott.
And I'm AJ Knox.
We watch chick flicks and rom-coms and decide if they need fixing. Can we make them better or can we make them weird? This week, we're talking about Reality Bites from 1994. It's directed by Ben Stiller. This was his first full-length feature as director, and it was written by Helen Childress, and it stars Winona Ryder, Ethan Hawke, and Janine Garofalo. Childress was 19 and a freshman at USC when she wrote the script.
God, was she really? I mean, I get it. It makes sense. But also, good on her. Like, 19 years old. That's awesome.
But then you're also like, so is that because you were hanging out with the, like, graduated seniors who hadn't moved on?
Yeah, probably.
Quentin Tarantino had originally intended to include My Sharona on the soundtrack to Pulp Fiction and went to get the rights, and the song had already been licensed to this movie, so he didn't.
Hmm.
A real-life man named Troy Dyer attended USC with Helen Childress, and in 2005, he sued her for defamation. Childress claimed that Dyer gave her permission to use his name because he was straight-laced and conservative and the total opposite of the character. But they settled to everyone's mutual satisfaction, according to Dyer. And I was like, why would that take you 10 years? Is it just like, that's when he got Tinder? No, Tinder didn't exist. But like, that's somebody made one joke too many or something,
yeah,
you know?
Like, that is weird that it took an entire decade for him. You would imagine he would have done it right off the bat.
This movie apparently was turned down by pretty much all of the Hollywood studios because Singles, which was also one of those like Generation X touchstones, hadn't been a box office success, but finally it was picked up. And I would say that both of these movies are sort of cult classics, but in different ways. Had you seen this before?
So I thought I had seen this before, and I thought...
Had you seen Singles?
I don't know what I had seen, but I thought I had seen this, and I thought that this was a computer movie, a la Hackers.
So like Reality Bites, B-Y-T-E-S?
Yes, so...
Did you know that Hackers just turned 25, like last week?
Oh God, don't tell me that either.
So you were very confused all the way through?
I was... So confused. I really thought, I mean, I kind of had a sense of what I thought this movie was, but it was not at all what what it was. So, yeah, I didn't realize it was going to be like an MTV generation, you know, real world documentary, weird, you know, I had no idea.
One of the original titles was The Real World, but The Real World, the reality show, came out before they had time to make this movie.
That's funny.
So what is this movie about?
Hello, you've reached the winter of our discontent.
I'm making this documentary about my friends. It's really about people who are trying to find their own identity without having any real role models or heroes or anything.
It seems like your friends would be perfect for that.
I truly believe that if we can get two women on the Supreme Court, we can get at least one on you, Sam.
I lost my job.
Why'd you get a job at Burgerama?
I was valedictorian of my university.
Well, you don't have to put that down on your application.
All right, so this movie is a, I guess you would call it kind of like a, there's not a huge plot to it, I guess, but it's very much like kind of a slice of life of these several young adults who have just graduated college and are in the processes of figuring out, of discovering the truth that reality, as it is, bites. And, you know, they're kind of hopping from job to job. Winona Ryder plays, she was her class valedictorian, and she gets out and she works for this really sleazy combination of Mr. Rogers and, like, The View, I guess, kind of.
Just like a smarmy morning talk show person.
Yeah, played by Frasier's dad, who is, like, all smiles and sunshine on the camera and then all evil. But she's also a bad... Okay, I'm going to pause what the movie is about really quick just to say this. I have a feeling this movie would have felt very different if I had seen it when I was 19. Because I was so annoyed by these damn kids this whole movie.
Okay, so I will latch onto your pause. Because what I realized is... I've seen this movie so many times. And I saw it as a teenager when you know, you're like, wow, these people are so cool. And they're like, mm-hmm. so, you know, laissez-faire. And they're like, and of course, you know, Troy Dyer is like the perfect man. I sort of grew up and was in my 20s, I was like, okay, so she really should be with Ben Stiller.
Right. I mean, we'll get there when we get there. But
and it's kind of like, you know, when you watch Rent as an adult and you're like, yes, Rent is a thing.
Yep.
And we're here. You're like, you know, the universe does not owe you a Snickers. But then watching it again now, I'm still, you know, annoyed at them. But I feel this sort of tenderness for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this sort of, yeah, like a gentle, almost maternal tenderness. Because you're just like, aw.
Yeah.
Aw.
Yeah.
Like, and not even in a patronizing way. Which I probably did when I was like 27, 28, or 32. But I'm just like, aw, kids. And part of me was also like, oh, yeah, no, the, you know, Generation X were like, oh, you know, we came out into a world that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the elder millennials are like, sure you did.
Right.
Like, oh, yeah, the boomers broke it for you. But then I realized, you know, they came out into a recession pretty much, and then 10 years later, say when we were either coming into college or graduating, there was another recession.
Mm-hmm.
And then 10 years after that, you know, 2012, also not great. And it's just like 2022 is not going to be awesome either,
yeah.
Probably. No, it's just, it's funny because anyway, we'll get back into
it. Yeah, we'll get back into
it. Continue.
But yeah, so this movie, yeah, again, I'll just start over. Bunch of young people just graduated college. We're introduced to them because Winona Ryder is kind of doing a documentary on the roof of a building. They're all kind of smoking and drinking and hanging out and shooting the shit. We kind of get to know each of their different personalities. It's Winona Ryder. It's Ethan Hawke. It's Janine Garofalo. It's Steve Zahn. And we kind of get to know them. And then they all kind of, they eventually kind of all lived. I couldn't wrap my head around the living situation. It's mainly Janine Garofalo and Winona Ryder living together. But then,
yeah, and then Ethan Hawke briefly, quote unquote, yeah. moves in because he got fired, and Steve Zahn just hangs out.
Yeah, so it's like they've stayed friends. They have this living situation. Winona Ryder has this job working for the talk show guy. She sabotages her own job by writing crappy things on his cue cards and telling him to get his own coffee. And I'm like, well, if your job is to write the cue cards and to get the coffee, you're gonna get fired. And so she gets fired, and in the process she also meets Ben Stiller's character, who is kind of a higher up guy at a would-be MTV type of network,
but with more edge.
And in the meantime, Ethan Hawke's character Troy Dyer is kind of in love with Winona Ryder. A lot of love triangles happening. She ends up kind of falling for Ben Stiller, selling him her documentary she's making about her friends' lives. Not selling it, but kind of like pitching it to him to pitch to his network. In the meantime, oh my, it's like so much happens at the same time in this movie. She's also become jobless and is like racks up a $900 phone bill talking to a psychic. And she goes with Ben Stiller to the network to kind of pitch this thing, and he has turned it into this very real world kind of look at these lazy 20 somethings twisting her footage to make everybody look kind of loserish in the same way like the older generation kind of condescends on younger generations. So she gets mad at him. He tells her, listen, it's just my bosses. This is what you have to do if you want to sell a show at a network, which is true. And she leaves. And at the end, like, she hooks up with Ethan Hawke, and it's like, okay, we were meant to be together. And they kind of mature together, Ethan Hawke having been this kind of, like, total greasy-haired loser for most of the movie. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of it. It's just, like, there's a little love triangle with Ethan Hawke and Winona Ryder and Ben Stiller. It's also, like, very much about how hard it is to find a job as a young person, even if you're super qualified. That's a huge part of the movie. But it does kind of meander just kind of through this. There's a whole subplot about Janine Garofalo, who thinks that she may have HIV or AIDS, and she, like, gets a test and waits, like, the whole movie, but is, like, fatalistic about it. Yeah. There's a lot of little things that happen. That's why I think of it more as like, it's not about plot. It's just about these things happening to these characters.
And apparently an earlier version of the script had more of sort of all of the characters, so that it was sort of more of an illustration of a generation, yeah. I guess, rather than a romantic comedy set in that generation.
Right.
And I think it retains enough of it, but yeah.
Yeah, because I think that's what you just said right there. It is like, to me, it has these two different sides to it. There is the romantic, you know, love triangle chick flick side of it. But then there is this also, you know, feels very much like Kids or, mm-hmm. you know, or I'm trying to think, SLC Punk, you know, these movies that are kind of trying to capture a moment.
The zeitgeist sort
yeah.
of.
Yeah, so it was a little jarring because it had nothing to do with hacking or computers in any way.
I'm so sorry.
I don't know why my brain works the way it does.
I've always tried to back and forward in my head, like, is it reality bites, like reality sucks, or are reality bites like slices of life because of like the pizza and everything? So like just depending on how sort of intonation it can be both. So, yeah, like you said, there's no, like, main trope. It's just, you know.
It's the love triangle.
Young adult, new adult finding themselves.
Yeah. And it's kind of the choice between the slacker guy who really loves her and the buttoned up, you know, well-to-do guy who maybe is prioritizing his career a little bit. But I don't even know that he is. Like, that's the other thing is mm-hmm. We'll talk about that.
Okay, so. The main two coupley people.
Mm-hmm.
Do you care about them as people?
Individually? All right. I don't know. I mean, again, if I had seen this at 19, I probably would have really felt like Ethan Hawke's character, Troy, was, you know, unjustly maligned by society.
The man.
Yeah. And now I'm like, he's just kind of floating around, and that's a type of personality, but there's also like a moment where he kind of tries to demand a romantic connection between them as if it's earned because they've been friends for so long, and that really squicked me out. That was like,
he says something like, you know, I might run away and that scares you because I'm the only real thing you have, and I'm like, A, it should scare you because that is not like a selling point,
right?
That like this is unstable and unsure, and then also like how are you the only real thing she has? Do you mean the only difficult thing? Do you mean the only like thing that needs effort?
Yeah.
And how much does she have you exactly?
Yeah.
I think my thing is with all of these characters, but primarily Lelaina and Troy. I'm like, I can empathize, but I can't really sympathize.
That's a good way to put it.
Like, I can be like, because we've all been there. And like, yeah. Some days I feel like I'm there now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the movie does a good job of sort of showing that Lelaina is not as amazing as she thinks she is, which is a very important lesson. Mm-hmm. Like when you were saying not getting jobs, even though you're qualified, it's like, is she that qualified though? You know, because like she was a valedictorian.
Yeah.
Yes. And she has what we're told over and over again, you know, she has a talent, but that is not necessarily enough to get you somewhere. And where she thinks that she should get it, but she's not necessarily qualified, but we never really see Troy get either like his comeuppance or some humble pie. Like what sets him around is that his dad dies and he like gets a sense of the fleetingness of everything.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not necessarily character development. That's not necessarily like, you know, he just realizes like I shouldn't throw away a good thing and I should relate to the people I care about and I should do things that matter. But he never actually learns that being, you know, smart and snarky is not actually a whole personality.
Yeah.
Because I remember like when I was 16, 17, that quote that there's no secret handshake. There's an IQ prerequisite, but there's no secret handshake. I was like, yes. Like that was my sort of my life essence. I'm like, yes, people are stupid. And while I can still feel like that, I'm like, but no, though, because there very much is a secret handshake
yeah.
with a certain kind of like cool dude.
And he is like the when they're at dinner early in the movie with her parents and they ask how his family is and he talks about how his dad's dying of cancer, but he says, like, well, my dad's dying of cancer, so it's like, whatever. You know, he has this, like, really aggressive way of directing that, and I'm like, you're an unpleasant person to be around.
Mm-hmm. What's funny is, and I only just realized this pretty much right now, is because I would bet that he also has this weird, like, simultaneous sort of complex of being better than everyone else and not as good as everyone else because he dropped out of college. And Ben Stiller's character also dropped out of college.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference is that I think that he dropped out because he was like, well, I can still, like, I can work now.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I would guess that Troy dropped out because he was like, well, I'm failing these three classes. I could probably pretty easily make up for it, but I don't want to show that I care or am making an effort.
Yeah.
So, like, he drops out because he's, in his mind, he's Jack Kerouac.
Yeah.
But really, like, the two of them are kind of on, like, a level of their, you know, qualifications or whatever. But he has dropped out for, like, the right cool reasons.
Right.
Whereas Michael is a sellout.
He's a sellout, right? And that, to me, is, like, the weird, that's the weird dilemma as somebody who's older right now is, I'm like, you're in your 20s and you have a really stable career and you're financially set, and there is a little bit of the kind of the teenage angst that disappears over age that I'm like, yeah, I would rather have that.
But also where it's like, because again, like you're saying, we don't necessarily see that Michael is super focused on his career, more that, you know, he also, like, he works in a creative field.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not just the money guy, and he's not just like, he, it feels like he has something there, and he's not just telling her that she's talented because he wants to sleep with her.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he is in that way kind of living the dream. Like, he gets to work in this stuff. I don't know why he's in Houston, but they probably have their HQ there. But it's just funny because what I was saying to my husband, who also had never seen this before, I was like, Michael's deficiencies are much easier to fix, where it's like, all right, you don't have the same pop culture references. That can be fixed. And, like, okay, so he listens to weird, like, gangster rap in his sob. That can, I don't know why, like, you don't need to fix it, but, like, that he's not the same kind of, like, you can, you know, take him to the Gap to go shopping or mm-hmm. thrift shopping, watch some movies together. Whereas Troy's deficiencies or faults are way harder, if not impossible, to ameliorate. You know, like, that's, it's a lot easier to be with the not as cool guy and, like, find good things about that than to be with a guy who is always going to hurt you and say that it is your problem and your fault.
Yeah.
Because you should be above that reaction, and that's just how he is, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, there's a little toxicity about Troy that is kind of off-putting when I consider, and we'll get to this when we talk about the ending, but when you consider her choice, right? Like her choice between these two guys.
And I feel also that the edit that they do of her footage, I, over time, I've sort of both realized and felt that, yes, it is absolutely not what she was doing. But then again, we don't really know what she was doing with her footage.
Right.
But for what it was, it's not horrible and it's not bad. Because I don't even think it paints them as these slackers. It paints them as sort of the grunge, like, good slacker for this audience in this medium, mm-hmm. where it's like, it's funny. It does have that real world feel.
Absolutely. It has a Kids in the Hall feel too. Like, it almost feels like the same song.
Yeah, Sick Sad World from Daria. Like, it has this fun cut. And I think maybe what it is because, you know, she talks about how, you know, it's about trying to find yourself in a world where you're not given any role models. And, you know, she clearly, like, she has her heart in this, and mm-hmm. it will feel like someone scribbling all over your baby. But, she knew that going into In Your Face, the network, something like this was probably going to happen. She wasn't prepared for it, and neither was Michael. But, you know, like, it's not badly done. It's, like, I would watch that, you know?
Yeah, and the other thing about it, too, is if you're pitching an idea to a network, that network is going to produce it, and they're going to tell you to do it their way, right?
You're going to be, because she's not giving them a finished documentary that's graded and all that stuff. She's like, here is some footage. Would you like this content for your network?
And so when Ben Stiller kind of follows her out, he goes, I'm sorry, but like, I didn't really have a say in this. And this is what you have to do to sell this kind of stuff to our audience. And that is the breaking point. I'm like, well, no, that's not the break. At least to me, being older and maybe arguably wiser, I don't know, that like that is not the breaking point. If you want to do something else, then maybe he can help you sell it to a different organization, use his connections to take a finished product somewhere else. But if you want to pitch to this network, that's what it's going to be. I don't think it's the never see this guy again, he's a monster finality that this movie makes it out to be. But again, had I seen it at like 18, 19, I may have, or when this came out, I was
absolutely
10, 11. So I may have changed my tone, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. And also, I mean, watching the clips of everything, it is fun, but it's fun like hanging out with your friends. And as an adult, I'm like, really, a documentary about your friends getting high and talking about good times.
Yeah.
That's, everyone thinks that, you know, their friends are interesting and that they can do it, can turn it into something interesting. And very few people actually can.
Yeah.
Speaking of good times, though, I want to say it was really funny. There's early on, there's a clip from the original One Day at a Time,
yep,
which made me so happy because I love the reboot / remake. I will recommend to everyone, if you haven't watched it, to to watch it. But yeah, like, that comes into it, too, where you're like, I want to know what she actually has done or intends to do with that material, because parts of it are interesting. Parts of it are like, you know, where the things that are actually interesting are Vicky worrying about AIDS and Sammy worrying about coming out to his mom.
Yeah.
And maybe not Troy being superior into the camera.
Yeah. And it does feel like sometimes when she's got the camera on those people that these were monologues that, now knowing that the screenwriter was a college freshman at the time, it definitely seems like maybe she consulted with some people in the screenwriting department, or maybe even some people at the theater department, because those sure seem like audition monologues, you know, to help kind of craft these 1.5 minute stories, right? And they feel very monologue-y.
Although I do love and still quote the Pofleag little skit.
Yes,
I love that.
That's fun.
I'm beginning to like the sound of that.
Yeah, that is very good.
And that, you know, we immediately come into the other characters, mm, and the people around them are, as almost always, more interesting than,
yeah,
the love story.
Yeah,
I love Vicky. Like, we've already talked about how Janine Garofalo is like my platonic ideal of a person.
It's so funny, though, to see her in this movie, because so often in movies, she plays, you know, kind of brash, and she does play that here a little bit, but then there's the whole thing, like the documentary footage of her at the Gap, and I feel like it is authentic. She's actually, like, really proud of her job and what she's done. I don't feel like that's a show for the camera.
Yeah, she's like... 20%, you know, pretending to be ironic about it, but she's happy that she's a manager.
Yeah.
And like, I really appreciate the scene where, you know, where Lillian is like, I'm not going to work at the Gap. It's a very good exchange, because I see that happening, mm-hmm, in real life, especially at 23.
Yeah.
And also, like, it's possible that Lillian just means like, I want to try a little bit more before I take like a retail job, because that'll make it hard to apply for other jobs, blah, blah, blah. But also, Lillina is a snob.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I also think that, like, the, you know, I like Frasier's dad. I like Lillina's, mm-hmm, parents, both sets of parents. They're tiny parts, but they're, you know, they're done well. They fill a very good little part of the movie.
David Spade as the Wiener Schnitzel day manager, who is telling her about how intense.
Do you know why I've been here for 6 months?
Yeah, that is like the best punchline for that scene. Like, that is actually really good writing, you know, because he spends an entire scene telling her how difficult this job is, how demanding it is, how much she's going to have to work, how hard it's going to be, putting her through the ringer, asking her to do math problems. And then the punchline of that whole scene being, that's why I've been here for 6 months, is so good. but it is also so accurate to the service industry and the food industry as somebody who's been in that industry or who had been in that industry for many years. That is very accurate.
He has completely adopted the wiener dude.
Yeah.
Right on. So there's not really, like, I mean, part of me is like, Troy's the villain, but he's not. Maybe the parents are, I mean, the establishment, the man is the villain, man.
The economy.
The economy. It's the economy, stupid.
Still is. I mean, and I will say this, I, like, to jump back a little bit into Winona Ryder's character, is I do really sympathize as somebody with a, who has 3 degrees, trying to find a job after that. In a market that had crashed and in an industry that was kind of being harder and harder to get into.
I'm only laughing because I have 3 degrees and graduated with a journalism degree into pretty much that same market. High five.
Yeah. And like that job hunt was real. Like I remember going on a job interview that I applied on Craigslist. It like paid well. And I went into this room. I went into this office building, you know, and it was a bunch of people. It was really everyone that was working there were like children in overlarge suits. It was very strange. And it was like a marketing company or something like that. And they were doing 2-person interviews to get through as many interviews in a day as they could. So they bring me in with another person. They're interviewing.
It sounds like an MLM.
What is that?
Multi-level marketing, like a pyramid scheme?
Oh, it absolutely was. Because the woman behind the desk who's interviewing us and the guy sitting next to me was literally, and I do not mean this in any kind of pejorative sense or dismissive sense, he was a McDonald's fry cook. And I remember having in that moment the same kind of feeling that Winona Ryder did, which is like, I'm better than this. But I wasn't because I was at that interview, right? Like we were all in the same boat. But the lady across the table said, you know, my goal is that in 6 months, you're sitting on this side of the desk. And the whole time she interviewed us for 15 minutes. I was like, I still don't know what they do.
Oh, this was definitely one of those scams. But yeah. And it's funny because when her stepdad says, you know, she doesn't have to put on her resume that she was valedictorian of her class, which, you know, is a little bit meant to make him sound dim, but really, like, is something that you sometimes have to do.
Yeah, you have to dial your education back. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite character?
I mean, just for that tiny little scene, I do love David Spade's kind of cocky Wiener Schnitzel manager. But I do feel like if I'm going for more major characters, it's a toss-up between Vicky, Janine Garofalo, or Steve Zahn's Sammy. I like them both a lot. I think they're both empathetic characters. I did think it was interesting in the 90s to put the AIDS panic on a straight woman. Mm-hmm. That was like an interesting way to kind of deal with that. I don't know totally how I feel about it, but I also do remember only very recently have STD tests got fast. Mm-hmm. So I definitely remember like waiting for the phone call even in the 2000s, right? That it was like, and the stress.
And
of
I think because, you know, I like that she's not sort of explicitly slut shamed. It's more that like, you know, she's a little too cynical, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, you know, she just leaves before they can leave. But where it is like, this is a behavior that is sort of around this time becoming problematic for straight women.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like where for a long time it was the gay disease.
Right.
And this is a time where it's like, oh, well, that's that's not necessarily true. And in that way, it feels very real because she will have been of a generation to have seen, you know, when she says she's just a couple of coughs away from the hospice. And if they're all in, if they all studied creative things, they all, you know, they all have their sort of BFAs, I guess.
Yeah.
She is likely to, if not directly know people, she at least knows people who know
people.
Who knew people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good, really good point.
And I kind of like when Sammy says that, like, he's not really celibate because he's afraid of AIDS, which, you know, people did do that. But just, like, he doesn't want to I don't know how you, like, he doesn't want to actively live and act in a closet. He doesn't want to hide actual relationships, not just who he is.
Yeah. But I think both of those characters are really empathetic. I think it's really smart of the movie to not have everybody be like Troy. Like, to have examples of people who are, like, graduating and moving on with their lives and trying to get their stuff together and, like, working hard and failing times, and people who are having identity crises.
And also just to show that you can be that sort of cool, you know, hipster slacker, pop culture stoner, whatever, without also being a complete douche.
Yeah, absolutely. Because she puts Winona Ryder in her place. She's like, you don't get to talk to me like that. Like, you need, like,
and they're not, you know, they like, if you look at when Michael comes to pick Lilaine up the first time, all of them are a little like, there's a suit in our living room.
Right, yeah.
But not all of them are completely dismissive. They're just like, all right,
from a different
unexpected
stratosphere than we are.
But, like, it's also interesting if you think about sort of the contrast between, you know, Michael, who doesn't have a degree, mm-hmm. but has, you know, kind of lucked into a lucrative job, but still in a creative field. And then the other people who did graduate and have degrees, but aren't there, at least not yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the contrast there of, like, realizing that rent is a thing and being like, well, you know, I have to work at the Gap.
Yeah.
Because we're not told what the other character's thing was. Like, we don't know, like, is Vicky, is she a writer? Is Sammy a photographer? You know, like, we don't get any of that really. So we don't get to see, like, are they working on their things while they are waiting tables and folding shirts?
Right.
And then Lena, who's like, you know, not only does the world owe me a Snickers, the world owes me Sundance, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I agree. I think they're my favorite characters too. I feel like the least favorite, like, is just like, it's Troy, because but he is necessary for the story. Like, I accept that, and you can't take him out, but I'm just like, my dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
My friend, my bro. Come on.
There is that kind of, like, there's that entitlement, slacker entitlement. I don't know what to call it, but yeah, that is, again, I probably would have found really endearing and charming as a kid.
My brain just suggested Holdenier than thou.
Oh, that's really good.
Uh-huh.
Holdenier than now. Oh, that's really good. I appreciate a good literary pun.
Mm-hmm. But it also feels very, because you know.
Oh, you know, Catcher in the Rye is one of his. Oh, man. It's his favorite book.
Yeah.
That and On the Road, as you said. Maybe even The Rum Diaries. Probably The Rum Diaries, too.
And you know that it's just a coincidence, but he has absolutely no female writers in his bookshelf.
Yeah. He maybe has a copy of, like, something by bell hooks, but he's never read it.
Yeah. He owns a copy of The Bell Jar that someone left behind.
Yeah.
On one of the few times he brought someone home. But I'm very pleased with myself.
I am too. That was good. That was really good. I was just going to say really quick that on IMDb, the storyline says that when Winona takes her homemade video to his MTV-like station, she must decide what she values, the materialism of Yuppie Michael or the philosophical musings of Troy. I'm like, well, it's not really philosophical musings. It's just high.
Because what it really should be is, like, are you choosing between the materialism or your material?
Right.
That's really what it is. It's not like, because his philosophical musings are replaceable by another guy in a bowling shirt and floppy hair.
Right.
What's your favorite part?
The Wiener Schnitzel part. I love it. I'm a sucker for a good long setup for a joke. Like, I laughed out loud. It's like one of the only times I laughed out loud in this movie. I feel like that's my favorite part for sure. I also did actually really like this scene where Winona and Ben Stiller are talking with their big gulps. Mm-hmm. That's just a charming little scene.
And it feels real, like that weird date where you're like, you can feel that you both agree that this is going well, but it's still a little weird, but kind of in a good way.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where the good kind of philosophical musings come in. We are like, I need to show that I'm, like, funny and smart, but not in a way that seems like I'm trying.
Yeah. Yeah, I think.
No, I agree.
Those are my two favorite scenes. What about you?
I think it might be the Paflag.
That's really scene. Good too.
But I also appreciate when they're in the diner and she's talking about when Vicky's talking about her fear
mm-hmm.
of actually having HIV or AIDS, because it's so well played, and it's like a reminder to both us and Lelaina that she's not actually the main character. Like, she's not the protagonist for everyone. Mm-hmm. And then it's rounded out so well, like with her little, because you're still with her emotionally through the whole, like, you know, I'm the character on Melrose Place.
Yeah.
And then Winona Ryder goes, you know, there's a beat, and she goes, but Melrose Place is a really good show. It's just a very well little, like, well-crafted little scene.
Yeah. There are elements of this movie that kind of reminded me, and now that I know that the writer was young and new, kind of reminded me a little bit of Juno. Some of those, like, witty mm-hmm. little things, those very real little moments, and Diablo Cody, I think, kind of working from not the same mindset in that she was a high school freshman, but, like, from the same kind of outsider perspective, you know, I think that there's parallels there. But yeah.
Was there anything you didn't like?
Yeah. I mean, I would. My least favorite part was kind of the picking Troy element of it.
Agreed.
But I also. The whole gas card thing was weird too. Like, the.
Well, she's just showing some ingenuity.
That is, I mean, absolutely. Somebody gives you a gas card, says, I'm going to pay this.
It feels a little less bad because her dad is like, I'm not going to give you money. You have to be, you know, find some ingenuity. She's like, all right. Okay.
Yeah.
For a certain value of ingenuity.
Yeah.
Okay, so the ending.
Why does it always come down to this in chick flicks, Julia? Like, you're the expert. Tell me why writers love to make the female characters choose between a really shitty guy and a moderately shitty guy, and then we have to choose one of them.
I think, like, the shitty guy thing is because there's this idea of strife makes things more romantic. Difficulty in overcoming and or seeing that there's going to be a future of overcoming, that means that it's real because then it's worth it.
Okay.
Like, if you meet some, like, you know, like when we watched Love Guaranteed, yeah. And you're like, this is a nice story, but there's no, like, friction
mm-hmm.
because, and, like, you know, there could have been friction if there was somewhat of a dark moment, but there's just, like, these are two decent people falling in like, and for some reason, it's easier to have someone who is shitty and treats you shitty than to have any other problems along the way. Like, if what you have to overcome is, you know, somebody moves and you never got their number, or, you know, all of these other things, it is easier to be like, well, he's damaged, and that means that if I'm the only woman he has ever loved, that makes me special, mm-hmm. and I can fix him with my love, et cetera, et cetera. And as someone who met a through-and-through decent person and then stayed with him, I can recommend it. But I know people are like, you want passion. And it's like, yes and no, because a lot of the time, passion is just, you know, you burn right through, and you're not just like, you know, this is a nice little campfire, and it takes a little while to get going, and you have to keep feeding it and so on. You want sparklers and fireworks. And the thing with fireworks is, even if you're not, you know, San Diego and set off accidentally all of the fireworks
at
in
once?
24
oh,
seconds.
That was, if you guys haven't seen that, look up this San Diego. Oh, God.
I'll link a video.
It's every firework in San Diego, 1/4 of July, all the fireworks.
Like, they were timed to go over, I think, like 20 or 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And something went wrong in the control panel, like something shorted or backfired. And all of the fireworks went off at once in about
from four different fireworks stations
in about 20 seconds.
Oh, it's so good.
And my point is that, yes, that was actually really amazing. But, like, you know, fireworks are over, and then all you have is the smell of sulfur.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, a good fire pit. Anyway. But yeah, no, I think it's that there is this idea of romance in difficulty and damage, and, you know, being like, well, our love will fix him, and where you're like, that actually, to even have that be remotely true, he also has to make an effort, and that effort cannot be, but I love you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, you're kind of like, he is gonna cheat on her within like a month,
right,
of them moving in together.
They move in together, like, that's the end, right?
Yeah. And he's gonna make it into somehow her fault.
Yeah.
Because the universe owes him a busty blonde.
Yeah.
You know, because I feel like he is one of those, the type of guy who's like, well, you know, I really do want a smart brunette. and brunette here is not actually brown hair. It's more of like, you know, a type of person. Yeah. But then somehow they only date the vapid blondes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else to say.
Well, I have things to say about the ending, but I'll save it for the fix part.
Same. So on Rotten Tomatoes, this has a 66% fresh rating from critics, 74% from audiences. It has a 6.6 on IMDb. What would you give this out of 10?
Oh, man. It's hard, right? Because, like, I can... This movie brings back a lot of nostalgia for me, even though I haven't ever seen it. Like, hanging out, smoking cigarettes with my friends is a very...
Oh, my God. I wanted to smoke so bad.
Oh, me too.
This was worse than His Girl Friday.
Yeah, because this is, like, the kind of smoking that we used to do when we were teenagers and young adults, just kind of hanging out with our friends. And, oh, yeah. No, I really won't. Don't do it, kids. It's bad. But yeah, like, there was like this weird nostalgia for me, really tied around like the hanging out with a cup of coffee and a cigarette, which was like...
Do you have any like older cousins?
Much older than me. So like never hangout age.
Because, you know, I have three older siblings. Two of them are 9 years older than I am. So they are like right pretty much smack dab this age.
Yeah.
And or this sort of vintage, and the one who's 6 years older, which I would still sort of categorize in under this. And so, you know, they were always so cool,
right,
to me. And so I think that, you know, they and their cohort and like is just forever and ever going to be an ideal, mm-hmm, for me. Not maybe on a conscious level, and not necessarily that I would say that now for the person I am now. But, you know, like, certain people are just forever going to feel cool. And that nostalgia of being like, hey, I could have maybe been cool, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, because for me, it's a nostalgia of having seen it so many times, both as a kid and then with some annoyance in my 20s. and I don't, almost at least every 2-3 episodes, it's like, well, can I give this 3 different grades? Like, yeah. Can I give this 1 grade for being
it's
a sort
Molly
of...
the Molly Ringwald stars.
Because, like, how many Winona Ryders? No, because I feel like, you know, this is such a sort of document of its time. Mm-hmm. And for that, and for the different narrative devices it uses, I think it's a really good movie.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And so, like, there I would give it, like, an 8.
Uh-huh.
But then because the world does not owe you a Snickers... I'm like, 6.5. I think it holds up because, like, the problem isn't that necessarily, like, all of this crappy behavior is romanticized. It's that the way this movie is set up, she kind of has to end up with Troy. I'm gonna get to it in the fix as well. But I think I'm, like, 7 or 8, maybe.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of with you. Like, as a document of its time, I think it's really interesting, insightful, and really resonant. It also holds up 25 years later, like the anxiety around having a job. And this is also like the beginning of this era where the 20s kind of came into its own like continued age, right? Where people
stopped. Oh my God, when you said 25, I just realized that the kids born around the time this movie came out are now the age,
yeah,
that they are.
Yep.
Oh God. And they are not coming out into a fun world.
No, they are not.
Imagine this movie now where it's like, all right, so we had Zoom graduation.
Yeah. Really though, like I was kind of thinking about that stuff a little bit because, you know, one of the things this movie is trying to say, I think, is that this generation is facing very specific problems that have not really maybe been faced before. And I think that just has continued. And I think it probably is true, you know, continually, right, on a continual basis. But I do think about it because I'm like, oh yeah, this movie is 25 years old. These kids are coming out into this economic recession. There is a real disparity between kind of generational lines. And again, like I was saying, like this is the beginning of that time where people are starting to recognize the 20s, people's 20s, as kind of its own age range that is,
mm-hmm, because you can't become an adult because you can't. You can't find a job. You can't find
exactly
a home.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think all that to say, like, as a product of its time and as something that kind of points to kind of predicts the future in a way. I'm like, wow, that's really good. I don't like the romantic, I know we're on chick flick fix, right? I know this is our show, but I don't like the chick flick that is put into this movie.
I mean, I think you like the chick flick part where they're growing as people and hanging out. Yes. You don't like the romantic comedy
part. And so I feel like overall, because that does tend to take over the movie, it like lowers the movie's score for me. So I come in at like maybe a 6.
Mm-hmm. It occurred to me now that you're saying that too, is that because in one way it is a chick flick because it is about primarily this girl and her experiences. But I think that because it was such a zeitgeisty thing, I don't think people think about this as a movie about a girl,
right.
But it's about a generation, which is kind of cool because that's not often something that, you know, we're told that men don't see movies about women, and this somehow managed to hit. And this, you know, this wasn't, Ben Stiller wasn't super famous and like had credentials. So it's not like, well, it's a Ben Stiller movie.
Yeah.
It just on its own did that. So that's, you know, kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So, I mean, it sounds like this movie could use some fixing.
Yeah.
And like for my, and you know, we keep coming back to this, like my absolute instinct was to fix this. That just like, they don't get together.
Yeah.
And period. I kind of stand by that, but then I kind of walk it back because this is a movie about like all the stupid stuff you do when you're 23 and dating people who are the worst.
Damn it,
is Julia. Kind of part of that, you know? But I'm going to say that I want the version where there's more about the other characters.
Yeah.
Because I love Vicky and Sammy, and I think that you want even more of that generation. You want these different perspectives of being someone who maybe had creative dreams but is like, well, but I also have to make a living and all that stuff. So that it's not primarily about the will they, won't they. That's just, that storyline is just one of the things that goes on when you're 23, 24. Because I feel like there's room to make so many more kind of Gen Z touchstones.
Mm-hmm.
And then my like 1B fix is that she meets someone reasonable because there's not a binary. There's not only brilliant and fucked up or stable and boring and can't make the right references.
Yeah.
Because that would be kind of funny as well to be like, oh, right. Those aren't actually the choices. It doesn't have to be a triangle. It can be a smorgasbord.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. You bring up a really good point about being in your 20s and making mistakes, because I made plenty of mistakes in my 20s. And so my fix was going to be that they don't end up together, but I will negate that fix because you bring...
I mean, the fix could be that like the movie is 10 minutes longer and he does cheat on her and she goes, oh, right. Right.
Yeah. Or like it doesn't even have to be cheating, right? Or it's just like a recognition that of the different... or even just a scene where she's at her new job or wherever she is, and you know, a guy comes in and there's like an instant little meet cute, and then that's you know, because I do think like one of the things about being in your 20s for many people is that kind of dating, you know, and figuring it out. And so maybe an indication that, because the thing about the ending, the way the movie's ending is crafted, is it makes it feel like and happily ever after. And so I feel like if there's just a little nod to that, we're still in our 20s, we're still figuring it out, mistakes are still going to be made, and this is just one element of a snapshot of a time for these people, I think that would have helped me with the ending.
Because again, like it's so hard to not just think like, how are either of them actually going to make rent? But you know that he's not gonna make rent more months than not.
Yeah.
And like, because he keeps getting fired, and it's not just because the job market sucks, but because he can't behave.
Yeah.
And that's not cute for very long.
No.
But that's basically your fix.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it would have been that they don't get together, but now that you said that, I think it would be, yeah, they can get together, but I want a sense that this story continues and changes and grows and evolves.
And I mean, it would also be fun to see more of that, the actual Reality Bites thing that you get in the credits.
Yes, that would be fun.
That would be fun to see more of. All right, we made it better. Can we make it weird?
So, all right, my make it weird for this, instantly at the beginning of the movie, she's on the rooftop talking to all her friends, and you're seeing it all through the camera lens that she's holding. And we keep going back to that viewpoint, right? This home video. And my mind instantly went, because they're on a rooftop in a kind of what looks like a downtown area, my mind instantly went to Cloverfield. So my make it weird for this movie is keep the whole construct of the movie, keep the whole idea of the movie, but because it's a found footage movie, or it's, you know, where we see her home video stuff, you turn it into like Cloverfield. You just turn it into a horror movie.
That's amazing. It's have you read or heard of the book The Rest of Us Just Live Here?
No.
It's this great YA book that's about the people who go to the same high school as the chosen ones. So like, it's all these sort of little slices of life, and kind of in the background of them is, you know, the battle for humanity, or the Hellmouth opens and all these different things.
Yes.
Because they're not interesting enough to be part of the actual big fantasy story. And it's kind of verging on that.
Yeah. And Jenna and I just started watching Lovecraft Country on HBO, mm-hmm. which also very much is about generational horror. Mm-hmm. And so I had this like idea of what if the big issues, because there is no real villain, right? The villain is the economy, society, generations, etc. What if that becomes manifest as a giant kaiju or something?
I approve. I like it.
So yeah.
So for me, at first I was like, a sequel? Because they would all be turning 50 right about now.
Yeah.
And all of the main actors are still working, which I think is interesting. Like, you have some of them were established, both Ethan Hawke and Winona Ryder, but in different ways. Mm-hmm. And so that could be kind of fun. But then, and it's funny that you started talking about Cloverfield, because I was like, a Stranger Things crossover.
Oh.
And okay. I'm not sure exactly how, because like Stranger Things is set 10 years earlier, blah, 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 but somehow like there is this weird time loop, because, you know, there is, and it's because, you know, Stranger Things has so much that is like that very loving document of time, but made, about, you know, 30 80s. Years into the future. And this is contemporary with its story, but it would just be funny. And then I was like, so maybe Troy is the only one who can go into the Upside Down without being affected, because like, he's too cool for feelings.
Oh my yes.
Or he gets eaten right away, because that would be really funny, where he's like, I got this, and then he don't got this.
Yeah. I am absolutely down to think about, like, because Winona Ryder's character in Stranger Things, like, she is a mom who's like struggling to kind of be the cool mom, but also the strict mom, and kind of wrestling with the responsibility of that.
And like, she works in a hardware store because she's like accepted that that's what exists for her in this small town.
Yeah. Oh, that's really
good. She's accepted retail.
I like that.
Uh-huh.
I like that we both are kind of leading with our fixes right into Halloween. I think we're both like in spoopy thrill in our minds. I hadn't
even considered that. did we learn anything from this? I learned that I just want pizza right now.
I learned that I am pushing 40, because I was pretty grumpy watching this movie, like, damn kids.
And I kind of learned that, yeah, it is better to wind up with someone who's a decent person than someone who's super cool.
Yeah, seconded for sure.
Yeah, 9 out of 10 do recommend. next week we will be talking about Twilight. Because AJ hates me.
I hate that movie so much. I cannot wait.
Because we are getting into Halloween now.
Yeah.
And I kind of, now I'm like, can all our fixes for all these movies just be giant spider horror creatures?
I think that
actually maybe doesn't fit into. I also want to tell you that originally we were joking about doing all of the Twilight movies throughout October, and our, instead of making them weird, we were going to try to make them normal.
Yeah.
But we gave up on that.
We're not masochists. The world is enough of a nightmare. We don't need to put ourselves through that.
True. You can find our show notes at theincomparable.com/chickflickfix. You can support us on Patreon if you want, patreon.com/chickflickfix. We are chickflickfix on Twitter and Instagram. You can email us at chickflickfix@gmail.com. I'm sure we could set up a P.O. box if you want to send us Pop-Tarts or something. Or Eggos, I guess.
For, yeah, if we're doing Stranger Things. I'll take an Eggo.
So give us a ping. We will be back next week. Say goodbye, AJ.
Goodbye, AJ.
Tempted by the fruit of another. It's a really good soundtrack, too.